thing. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Michael, my dear.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us as always, except for last week, Mr. Smarty Pants.
With us as sometimes.
He's back. How you doing?
Doing well. Thank
good.
You.
Good to see you. So you were in Boston.
Yeah, we're in the Boston area and then up on the North Shore. I mentioned before, I still keep in touch with my high school science teacher. Mr. Prado is his name. Yeah, and his wife. They live up there in Ipswich on the North Shore. Ipswich is a wonderful town. It has more colonial era homes than any other, like still intact, than just about any other town. I think maybe even any other town in the United States. It was found in the 1630s or something like that. It's really very picturesque. Mm-hmm. But the main reason why I was there was not for the pretty houses, because I kept up a wonderful relationship with them. And I think in many ways inspired me to do what I do, because I liked being at school so much with my teachers that I never wanted to leave. So, that's what I do.
I like school too, because the adults were mostly sober, you know, as opposed to my home front.
I'm glad you put in mostly. Yeah. I had a math teacher that used to sit, because I was, of course, this was Eastern Kentucky. I had a math teacher sit and whittle pieces of chalk while we were doing tests. He was really good at it, actually. He could do a real mean Abraham Lincoln.
And like really? Out of chalk?
He'd just take this little penknife out, and he'd be like, we'd be doing a geometry exam or whatever, and he'd make a little like a Pez dispenser style Lincoln.
Nowadays he'd be streaming that.
Yeah, exactly.
So we had a teacher in, I think it was seventh or eighth grade, social studies they called it, which like covers everything. You know, it's kind of a blanket thing.
Yeah.
And his name was Mr. Crokey.
Oh yeah.
And he did absolutely nothing. He would show us a movie every day. They'd have these films.
Sure.
But there were a lot of them were like just kind of industrial films, and they were kind of vaguely disguised commercials. I remember. But he would show us a film every day, and they would leave while the film was running, and he'd go out and smoke, and he'd come back just smelling like a chimney. So we called him Smoky Crokey. But one day I thought it'd be funny to run the projector backwards.
Sure. Everyone loves that.
Yeah, so I did that, and then but I didn't realize when you run it backwards, the take-up reel doesn't work, so it spilled about 600 feet of 16-millimeter film on the floor. And
I'm sure Alcoa had another one to give you guys.
he was very upset when he came back.
So my social studies teacher, Mrs. Blankenship, she said I was a communist. She did it right in class.
My typing teacher thought I was a communist.
Well, it was the weirdest thing. She was talking about Martin Luther King Jr., of course, and she was saying how MLK was a communist. And I was like, what? You know, of course, today we know for sure he wasn't, because they were listening to every noise he made. The FBI never found any evidence of anything like that. But I just remember at the time saying, well, he won the Nobel Peace Prize, Mrs. Blankenship. And she said, if you're defending Martin Luther King, then you must be a communist too.
Wow.
Yeah. And this kid came up to me afterwards and said, well, I know you're not a communist. And I was like, well, thank you, James. You know, it's like, it wasn't really making me too upset.
Well, that was nice. He supported you.
Yeah. Well, we were mean to Mrs. Blankenship, though. She, Mrs. Blankenship, when she was younger, when she was a Booth. She was one of those Booth girls. This is all Eastern Kentucky.
What's that?
Booth. That's just that's their last name, the Booths.
Okay.
And they were all really, really skinny.
But she did something.
They were all very, very, very slender, very skinny girls. And And as we say down in Kentucky, kind of rivey. I don't know where that comes from, but they were rivey. And then when she became, she got married and she became a teacher, she became very shapely. And we figured that she must have a lot of padding. So we were, all of us were kind of, theorizing about this. So we decided to put it to the test because little scientists that we were, we wanted to know, you know.
Yeah.
So we put
the thirst for knowledge.
The thirst for knowledge. We put a thumbtack in her seat.
Yeah.
And when she sat down on it, there was no reaction. And she got up and she was at the chalkboard and she was writing. And you could see the tack was right, perforated right into what must have been her, like,
girdle
that was making her more shapely. Yeah. But there was one. So I don't know.
What grade was that?
That's a good question.
Like junior high?
That was early high school. We didn't have junior high down there. You just went right from grade school to high school.
Yeah.
So it was early high school.
Yeah.
But it would have been junior high like someplace else.
Yeah. We had something similar. So
yeah.
We didn't have a technical junior high.
So that was Mrs. Blankenship. The Revenge of Mrs. Blankenship. I have to say that
But kids that age are really mean to teachers. They'll find a teacher that's kind of, it's like find the weak one in the herd and pick on them.
Well, it's the ones that, I just give, again, as a counterexample, this teacher that I really liked. I mean, I had some ones that were just sweet as pie, and everybody loved those people.
Yeah, sure.
But it was the ones that tried to be the disciplinarian, the usual thing, you know,
the
Trump approach, which is, you know, the more you push, the more it backfires, you know? It's like, we learned that in seventh grade, you know? It's like, I mean, so they would try to rule.
Well, he'll get it someday.
Rule with an iron fist, and we're sticking tacks on the chair.
Right,
so, that's what you do.
For the revolution.
Yeah, she had a 34% popularity in that class, I recall. And we did the poll.
And the vote of no confidence.
The vote of no confidence.
Mrs. Booth.
No, she was a Booth originally.
She was a Booth originally.
She became a Blankenship.
Blankenship.
Yes.
Okay.
At any rate, because you got to keep these things straight down there. You get somebody's last name wrong in Martin County, Kentucky, and you're in trouble.
Yeah.
That might be somebody that shot your granddaddy.
Yeah, well, then the feuds come into play.
Go right on. Right on, yeah.
From 1830, Oh, well, good. I'm glad you.
We had a good time. We went to New York City after we visited, and
I hear it's a hellhole.
It's actually really nice. I've been there.
I'm going to have to recheck my source.
I've been there several times, but we did it. We only had a couple of days, so we went to a musical off Broadway. We went to a crazy art exhibit, and we saw some kind of other avant-garde thing. So a movie, this very very bizarre movie, which was like didn't have a rating. It was that kind of disturbing.
Yeah, in a basement or something.
Yeah, well, no, it was actually in. Oh God, Mel, it was in a beautiful old theater where it's like nothing is flashing and you don't have a half an hour at advertisements and it's not markup, thanks you, and some annoying actress comes out and tells you how wonderful it is to be in a theater and all the other BS.
Right.
It was just like, here's your movie, damn it. It's like, you want some popcorn? Get it across the street. It's kind of like, whatever. What are we here for?
Nice.
We're here for the movie. So I love that. I love that film.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. It's about the movie.
I didn't know that stuff was still around.
It's still around, yeah. By the way, in Paris, they're like that, too. You go to a movie theater in Paris, it's just kind of like, you know what, whatever.
Here's
sit down,
movie.
Watch your movie.
Yeah. Eat your snails.
And everybody shut up. But everyone does. That's the fun part. Everyone shuts up.
Yeah.
Nobody's looking at their phone or anything. So,
I saw a guy today in my neighborhood. He was pushing a baby carriage around. He's walking his baby.
Yeah.
And he had one hand on the baby carriage and one hand with his phone. He's watching his phone while he's walking the baby.
You're worried about the population.
The baby had a phone, too, which was really disturbing.
And the baby's bear had a little tiny toy phone to train the baby to have the phone.
Well, that's why we need the data centers.
Yeah, we do because I mean, if you're giving bears, you're giving teddy bears phones. You gotta up your game. What is there's one that's like the whole state of Utah or something that they're making now?
Yeah,
I thought that was a good use for that space.
Well, that's fine. Yeah.
No, but it's right out in the middle of the desert, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just like this whole county is going to be data center.
Are they going to pump Lake Michigan there or what?
They probably tried to. It's kind of like, it is dystopic, obviously. We think about like a whole planet that's a machine or something.
Yeah.
Some kind of sci-fi.
Isaac Asimov, was it Trantor or something?
Yeah, some kind of, some kind of science fiction, you know, craziness, and it's like, oh yeah, we're going to do that. And by the way, the people that are doing it are all like the evil reptilian overlords. Yeah, like that all checks out too. Yes, foolish human prey. I mean, people. Actually, it's interesting because I saw an article this week called "Are We Sliding Back into the Middle Ages?" We're so uncertain where we're anchored in time. Are we moving towards the dystopic hyper society? Yeah, are we regressing? Are we reverting to earlier forms of social organization? I mean, it's not lost to me that when you look at your phone, you scroll. Okay, scrolls ended in like the 500s. We went to books after that. But now we're doing scrolls again, So.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, let's see. On sort of a related note, the story here that TikTok disproportionately served anti-democratic, that's a democratic with a D,
yep,
anti-democratic videos during the 2024 election. Recent study provides evidence that TikTok's recommendation system tends to expose users to more, it says conservative, I'll say more.
I don't think that's the right word.
Right-wing and anti-democratic political content than liberal material. This imbalance occurs regardless of a user's initial political interests, suggesting that automation plays a significant role in modern information access.
You just come right over here.
Wow.
I think this was
published in Nature, by the way.
We should refer to it as medieval content, I think. Because isn't that what they want? They want, like, everybody, it's like feudalism, right? Like, I'll be the big cheese and I'll be in charge and I'll take the most money and have all the stuff. And then all you little guys down there, you'll get something too. You get your own little plot. You can tell your wives what to do, and you white people can tell the black people what to do, and that'll be our deal. That'll be our deal.
Yeah,
you let me have everything I need, and then you can be my little sub lieutenants down there.
Keep some crumbs,
and you keep some crumbs, but you'll have power in your little area, just like a feudal lord.
Right,
and then everybody below you can be your vassal, and it'll all work out fine. That's the way God ordained it at the beginning of time. The great chain of being.
Well, I told you about this business this enterprise that J.D. Vance was involved with some billionaires. I don't know if he still is, but
old shady.
It buys up distressed farmland.
Okay.
Farms, and then it allows the farmers to stay and work the land. and then they split the profits
So it's feudalism with robots. We'll get the robots.
Well,
in there.
They let them work the land until
they have robots.
Until the robots show up. But I mean, it's sharecropping. I mean, and Vance was all in on that. He probably made it was like some venture capital thing when he was doing the VC thing. But
I always think of that the line. There was a episode of Seinfeld. Again, it's wonderful topical references. But there was an episode of Seinfeld where George wanted to do the trifecta. Do you remember that? He wanted to have sex, watch TV, and eat at the same time.
Yeah.
And Jerry's response was, George, we're trying to have a civilization here. And I kind of feel like we're really not trying anymore. We're really kind of devolving into George, right? We're looking at, except now we're looking at our phones and having sex and ordering something off the phone all at the same time. But it's the same concept. Too many things are happening in that one little spot.
Yeah.
It's just way out of control.
Well, that's how I felt watching the guy walk and the baby with this phone. I mean, not that I have anything against phones. I get it. They're seductive.
Yeah.
And I understand that.
Sure.
I'm not immune to that. But it's like, and I just felt like, walk your baby, put your phone away and enjoy the time with the screaming baby. And
I was talking with a colleague about AI, and my colleague was very pro AI, which is fine. I get it. And he was talking about all the amazing research you can do and amazing things you could potentially help humanity with in terms of this, ability to compile and inventory and examine huge amounts of information so very quickly. And I said, yes. And I also think jackhammers are great. Jackhammers do a really good job, but I don't think everybody needs to have one.
Yeah.
So he kind of didn't get it at first. Yeah. Like, what's the jackhammer? It's okay. It's a metaphor.
It's a tool.
Like, I think you've been reading the AI too long. Maybe you've forgotten the concept of metaphor. I don't know.
Look it up.
Look it up. It'll lie to you, but look it up anyway.
Yeah. Well, the Pope had said something about this. He has a uh, he
I downloaded his deal, by the way. I've read the first 10 pages of it.
His deal?
His message about the AI.
Oh, okay, yeah. So that's what I'm referencing, yes, though.
Yeah.
Magnifica Humanitas, it says.
Yes.
And he says Catholics can legally refuse to use AI. But I went to a higher power, and I fired up Gemini. And I asked if Catholics can use AI, and Gemini says... The short answer is yes, Catholics can use AI, but they must do so with serious moral caution and restraint. The Catholic Church does not view technology as inherently evil.
Nope.
In fact, the Vatican explicitly calls human creativity and technological progress a gift from God.
That's page nine.
This is according to the AI.
Yeah.
So, however, the Church has recently issued its highest level teachings on the matter, warning that AI is not morally neutral. So that's what we were talking about.
Yeah, a lot of it emphasizes, a lot of the... message that the Pope sent out has to do with Catholic social teaching in particular about how the, the technology is not the issue. We've said this on the show a million times. Every intelligent, I think, observer believes this. It's because technology is embedded in a kind of system, and it's the system that's the problem.
Right.
And so, they're trying to exploit us at every turn, and this just hyper-exploitation is what we're seeing here, starting with, ripping off, copywritten material and everything, and now just basically making everything something. Everything's a fee for service, and there's a million things that are constantly being changed and you're being locked into and being led to and so on. So it's the exploitational component, of course, that they're worried about, not the actual thing itself.
Right. Well, again, it's like, highways are great, but, don't be driving 300 miles an hour on the highway when you're drunk. I mean, it's
right. Like, and then there's that highway to hell. I think the Pope would say stay away from that.
When my kid was little, we made her clean her room, once.
horrible parents.
So she was in her room. She put the radio on. She liked having music while she was doing that stuff.
I listen to Haydn when I clean.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. I like Haydn. Yeah. But so she had Z104.
Yeah, very close.
Magic 98 or something on. But or Triple M with Jonathan and Kitty. But anyway, so the AC/DC song, and she would sing along with the songs when she would recognize them.
Yeah.
So the AC/DC song, Highway to Hell, came on.
Of course.
And she would be sweeping away. She was probably seven at the time or something. And she's, sweeping a room and singing along, I'm on the highway to
She's bleeping her own singing. What's the deal?
That was so funny.
That's a highly developed superego there. I don't know.
That was great. Now she swears like a truck driver.
Truck driver's blush.
Yeah. Sean sent us an email. You can send us an email at melonfloydmailbag@gmail.com if you like. And this is from Mindless Minion 6, number 6.
Number 6.
It says, hey, F boys.
Yeah.
I think it stands for funny.
Funny boys, yes.
Not sure if this surpasses being accused of being a communist, but when I was in grade school here in Madison, I came running home all excited and told my parents that the nuns said I was an instigator.
Oh, yeah.
I was so pumped.
Yeah.
He says, welcome back, pants. Thought of you a while back when I took a supposed shortcut on my bike and ended up crashing the outdoor graduation of a certain higher education institution along Lake Wingra. Oh, thank you. And number 6 there.
Good old number 6.
Yeah.
So do have a letter here as well from an actual physical letter.
Wow.
With a little stamp on it and everything from someone here in town named David. And I don't know what you guys were talking about on the air last week, but apparently you mentioned at some point the ever delightful sea otter.
Yeah.
And so there's a little card here about the sea otter. There's a picture of a sea otter, which I will testify to draw attention to the limitations of the medium there. Sea otter, it says its habitat is temperate coastal waters with rocky or soft bottoms. Well,
that's me.
Diet, 100 different prey species, including sea urchins and other marine life. That's also you. Threats, overhunting, and pollution. And here's an interesting fact, which was there's a yellow magic marker circling this. So this must have been what you guys were talking about. It says, to keep from drifting apart while they snooze, sea otters often sleep holding paws. Oh, isn't that adorable?
That's wonderful.
So on the back it says, this was discussed on the Friday show. It's true. Thank you for all your good work. So it's something we said was true. That must, that must have slipped through. I don't know what happened.
It's so notable. They sent us a letter. Yeah, hey, you said something true.
Yeah, we really have to emphasize that.
You know what's
that.
Funny is I have no memory of talking about sea otters. I mean, I'm sure we probably did, but yeah. I never remember anything.
I never remember anything either.
I think a different part of your brain kicks in when you do.
I think I have a different. I think there's a different submerged identity that emerges when I do this show.
Then I talk to Mel.
Well, I've had that experience because I got to the place where, because of what you just said, so many friends would say, well, you guys were talking about blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't remember that. And then I said, well, and then, or they'd say, well, you said this. And I said, no, Mr. Smarty Pants said that. I'm not taking the blame for that. That's all stream of consciousness. By the way, I got a list of cat names here. And if you wanted to send in a couple of cat names to help me out, I'd really appreciate it. So I need 20 cat names. I've got 17 so far.
Oh, you're close.
And I'm going to run right through them. But if you got one, just call up and let us know what you think would be a great additional 3 cat names. And I might even, if I give more than 3 additional ones, I might even get rid of some of these. So here they are. Jinky, Flubs, Snappy, Empress Maria Teresa, Pussyfoot, Snowball, Snowball 2, Luger, Hummingbird, Space for Rent, Orca, Harold, Nixon, Fluff Master General, Fleenus, Zapper, and Peanut. If you've got a better cat name or a cat name you'd like to add to that list, please call now, 256-2001.
Yeah, or drop us an email.
Or drop us an email at
melonfloydmailbag@gmail.com. So.
I'm getting a card for my aunt. She loves cats, and so I went to this wonderful shop in town that's down on State Street. Can I mention the shop? Am I allowed to do that?
You mention it.
Anyway, they have lovely cards there, and I got a card that I said, I want a cat card, and the person who's working there said, oh, we have a whole cat card section.
I'm sure.
And I found a card that says, cats, cats, cats on it. And I thought, well, that drives the message home. So, yeah. And it has like little
simple,
pictures of
right
cats.
To the point.
So I'm gonna name all the cats and give that to my aunt.
Here's a little news. James Tropas, the former, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. I don't remember this guy. The former attorney for President Donald Trump's 2020 campaign.
Oh, I don't remember
him. He played an instrumental role in the fake elector scheme that led to the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol. He's applied for $3.2 million through the Trump weaponization fund.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
You know, I was thinking about that. What people should do is every black person in the country should yeah. sue for reparations.
Yes. Finally, we've got a fund.
It would be so great if something Trump set up lead to something
but see,
like that.
Mel, I don't. Here's the thing: we know we have evidence that he's never, ever, ever paid anybody who's worked for him.
Right.
So. This money is not going to go to any of these people.
No.
He set it up so he can make the MAGA people, like, trick them into thinking he's not what he is, which is just this, horribly greedy
person.
Well,
also, he wants this militia at his beck and call.
Yeah. Yep.
Uh-oh. Hope that's a cat
I'm
name.
I'm sorry. let's see. Rutabaga, Drungo, LaRue, Hayeswood IV, and Charlie Paws. Charlie Paws is actually really good.
I like Charlie Paws.
Charlie Paws. All right, that's going on the list. Thank you. Okay, Charlie Paws. The paws that refresh. Yes.
On a related note, New Jersey lawmakers are considering a bill that would grant dog and cat owners up to a $900 income tax credit.
Oh.
The proposed credit splits eligible costs into two categories, offering up to $300 for everyday expenses and up to $600 for veterinary care.
Mm. So. Hopefully they'll pay for more poop bags, too. There's some people in my neighborhood, after the pandemic, everybody in my neighborhood got a dog. And some people got two dogs.
Yeah. That was Biden. Biden did that.
Biden
gave everybody a dog.
Gosh, darn it, Biden. But I noticed some folks are starting to put up little signs like, you know, don't let your dog poop in my lawn. I don't want your dog peeing on my lawn.
Yeah.
Because there's like platoons of them going up and down the street.
Oh,
you
sure.
Know, just
sure.
aiming it in all directions, you know. So it's kind of like.
Oh, thank you.
Do we have more cat names?
Mr. Wonka. That's pretty good. I like Mr. Wonka. Do you remember the time we did the pledge drive and we had cats versus dogs?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We got such an amazing
response.
That was
response. The most polarizing show we ever did. Like,
yeah.
We had to bring in Jimmy Carter to like mediate that.
Exactly. All right, that's how we got that Nobel Prize.
Let's all agree. You like things with four paws, right?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
we can all agree on that.
We can all agree on that. Let's start from there.
Here comes some more.
Okay. Yeah, well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry,
well, I
Lainey.
Guess that's the show today.
Yeah. Skittles, Booger, or formerly Sugar Booger, and then Miao Zedong. All right. Miao Zedong
oh,
is going
good,
on
I like
here.
That one. That's good.
Okay. There's the winner.
Here.
Okay. My Aunt Hilda's going to love these, by the way, so thank you, listeners.
In case you can't tell, I'm struggling to kind of keep the show moving with like a little bit of a modicum of content.
Yeah. I don't think I've used a single story. Let's.
Okay. You and Lainey are just doing the cat.
Yeah, we're doing the cat thing. Okay, so here's the headline. This is the headline. This is the actual headline. Greenland gives cold shoulder to new U.S. consulate. That's mighty good writing there.
That's some blubber, too.
Apparently, they've set up a new American consulate building in downtown Nuuk, which is the Greenland capital. And T.S. Eliot. Okay, that's a good one. That's meta enough, I think, that we probably. Okay, I think we got enough now. Thank you so much, everybody that called in. Poor Lainey's running back and forth like a maniac.
I hate to do this. We've got some emails.
All right, so. What do you got online?
Tanya keeps a running list.
Oh my lord!
Of cat names.
Oh, I'll have to access that.
There's a ton of them here.
Oh my heavens!
Nick / Nora, Millie / Mugs, Olive / Pickle, Skippy / Jif.
We had a dog named Skippy when I was a kid.
Oh,
I thought that was a great name for a dog.
Yeah, that's your like your porn name, Skippy.
Skippy Loretta, yeah.
I was going to say Skippy LaRue, but
Loretta.
Fluffernutter from Catherine.
Yeah, yeah.
Wiggy, a.k.a. Calvin McWiggins.
Wiggy, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like that.
It's from Jerry. It says, I'm currently recovering from a seizure in my sunroom, so I don't know.
You and me both, buddy.
And Robert just sent us a Nixon Agnew campaign sticker.
That's about right.
So that reminds me, we got to get to the best email we got.
I told you that I did Agnew at a restaurant once when they came up and asked what the name was, and I said what's the name, and I said Agnew. Spiro T. Agnew. And the girl goes okay. And then she goes back and then said, Spiro Agnew.
She's not 70 years old.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's probably 43. What are you talking about?
I always say Donner, so then they come Donner party of four.
Yeah. Not anymore.
There's only three of us now. That was a long wait.
The hors d'oeuvres gave out. I hope we're ready for dinner now.
Yeah, that'll cost you an arm and a leg at that place.
Dear Lord.
Mindless meaning absolute zero sent us an email at melonfloydmailbag@gmail.com. And he says, some people see Jesus in their burnt toast.
Okay.
I see Nixon in a stain on my end table. And you will testify.
Oh, my God.
It really does look like
Nixon. There's the nose, the whole deal.
The shady eyes, the beady eyes.
Oh, my Lord.
The lying mouth there. It's
so he said, Nixon, you know, Nixon's down in hell right now thinking, that rube, you know, no finesse.
About Trump.
Where's the finesse? Yeah.
Plus it's like, you know, I could have stolen a lot more money.
A lot more than that. I think of all the things he could have gotten away with. Yeah. If this is the limit, I don't know. Times change.
Yeah.
Hey, the arts panel that's charged with looking into these things, the Commission of Fine Arts, just this week approved President Trump's plan to build a 250-foot triumphal arch in Washington, even though it's going to be basically blocking everything. And then there's going to be a giant statue of him on top with flames coming out of his mouth, I think is what. A group of Vietnam vets has sued to stop the construction.
Well, good.
They said that there's lack of any congressional authorization. And they said that the this group of Vietnam veterans said that there's going to be no view now between the Lincoln Memorial and the Arlington National Cemetery.
Yeah.
Plus, it's, you know, there's a level of, again, imperial grandeur associated with this, which is really, I mean, there's a lot of Roman-based architecture, classical architecture in Washington, but it's supposed to be the period of time before the emperors, right?
It's
the Republic, yeah. Not the giant, like, Arch of Caracalla or something.
Yeah, we moved past that.
Yeah, you know, I guess we have.
We do, you know, we have having the MMA, or is it MMA fighters in the, at the White House, too? They're going to have the...
Oh, yeah, the, yeah. Because
so
nothing, you know, says the founding fathers like that.
Like gladiators.
Yeah, yeah. Like Hamilton Adams throwdown.
Well, Hamilton lost the one throwdown.
Yeah, he really did. So here's a quote from the architect, a guy by the name of Nicholas Leo Charbonneau. He said that Trump had rejected the suggestion to remove the large statues atop the structure because the arch is a monument for the living, not the dead. So there's going to be big flying buttresses or something on it. The intent of the arch, this is according to the architect, is a celebration in America of 250 years of greatness, freedom, and prosperity. Posterity. I think he means prosperity. It actually says posterity.
Posterior, I think.
Posterity means the future, dude, for which we can only thank the wisdom of our founders and God's providence. Well, is that what it is? I mean, there's also, like, there was the Civil War and things like that. You know, I mean, we had to self-correct a few times,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
We could all agree on that one.
People are pretty lukewarm on this 250th. Celebration.
On the semi-quincentennial?
I think part of it is that Trump has kind of made it a MAGA thing.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you know, people, I mean, I remember I'm old enough to remember the bicentennial.
Sure.
That was a big deal. People were really into that.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun.
I was on Boston Common. Arthur Fiedler and the Boston Pops
fun.
Were playing, of all things, the 1812 Overture, yeah. Which never really made much sense to me, but I'd rather do marching through Georgia myself.
Yeah.
That's just me, so...
But this is kind of fizzling. I mean, even Millie Vanilli's not going to not sing at this one. So,
Princess Cheese Dog.
Nice Wisconsin one. Well, I hate to do this, but we have to take a break.
Oh, okay.
Place my own.
And I, again, thank you for all of the hundreds of cat name suggestions. I obviously know how to get the listeners going here. We're having a pledge drive next week, aren't we? Is that right?
Yeah, we are. Oh, yeah. Wiggy had a seizure.
Wiggy had a seizure. Oh, okay.
It wasn't Jerry.
Maybe we can.
Oh, he got up. He just got up off his cushion and walked a few steps. First time since Wednesday morning. Oh,
it's the healing power of Mellon Floyd.
Yeah, come on, Wiggy, you can do it.
Get it going.
Yeah. So,
I saw a superannuated cat when I was visiting. Is it like what was it, 16 or something?
Yeah.
He was getting it done.
No.
So what else did you see? I'm sorry.
Oh, let's see. My cat's name is, this is from Mindless Meeting 7. My cat's name is Banksy Freddie Mercury.
Excellent.
All right, we're going to take a break, play some announcements, and come back with
some actual news.
Probably more cat names.
No, more cat names. No more cat names. I'm sorry. Sorry I opened that one up.
I have a recent court ruling in, Delaware, that says corporations can vote in some elections.
They already do. What are you talking about?
Well, it's Delaware. They're going to make it official.
Raleigh, North Carolina. Washington, D.C. Or Richmond, Virginia, too.
Support for this program is provided by WORT's listener sponsors, the National Electrical Contractors Association, Madison Division, and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 159, proudly serving electrical contractors and electricians in the greater Madison area since 1900. More info at IBEW159.org.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street. specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Bernie's Rock Shop, located at 901 East Johnson, and our new shop, Bernie's on Park, at 636 South Park in Madison. We offer handmade silver jewelry as well as unique mineral, crystal, and fossil specimens from around the world. Store hours and more information available at berniesrockshop.com.
And we're back.
Well, we just got the ultimate cat name list from a friend of the show, Laurel. And it was, gosh, I can't remember how long ago it was now. She had a new cat, and we did crowdsourcing for the name. And we just came up with scores of names. And Ignatz was what ended up being
the
cat's name. Yeah. Well, she loved those crazy cat cartoons.
Sure.
She's got some framed ones actually in her house, which
really
are really lovely. Yeah.
Nice.
So that was fun. It's like, I guess a little feeling of deja vu. It's like, oh yeah, I've been through this process before. Failing memory, I guess.
Oh. All right, I promise the story. Corporations can vote in some Delaware elections, according to a judge there. Corporations, partnerships, trusts, limited liability companies, and other, quote, artificial entities have the right to vote in Delaware elections under some circumstances, a judge said in a novel ruling. Judge Craig A. Karsnitz rejected an ACLU challenge to a charter permitting voting in local elections by the entities that own most of the property in the town of Fenwick Island.
Oh, Fenwick Island.
One of several municipalities in the state with similar provisions.
Interesting.
The judge dismissed the lawsuit from Delaware Superior Court, citing the principle of one person slash entity slash one vote.
Again, the robots are drooling right now, right? Okay. And the robot vote is in.
Well, he wrote that the divisions of faceless large corporations, or even HAL from 2001, controlling a small town are frightening in the stuff of science fiction. But trusts, partnerships, limited liability companies, and corporations are expressly recognized as persons in the Delaware Code.
Yeah, so, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
If corporations can be, then why can't, you know, charities, hospitals, universities. I mean, those are the original corporations. All the early decisions that were made, for example, by the Supreme Court about how corporations work and so on and so forth, was all about eleemosynary institutions. There was no business big enough back in the early 19th century to even
that
qualify.
That had standing
in that way, yeah. Hey, this is a sign of the times here, speaking of AI. The author of a nonfiction book about the effects of artificial intelligence on truth has acknowledged that he included numerous made-up or misattributed quotes concocted by AI. The author, Steven Rosenbaum, remember that first guy up against the wall, whose book, The Future of Truth, was released this month. It's incorporated more than a half dozen misattributed or fake quotes in sections of the book, reviewed by, it was in the New York Times. So he was asked about the quotes. Somebody at the New York Times, see, this is the way you used to work things. Back in the day, you had a publicly traded company or a privately owned company that had a reputation to keep up, and their reputation was for veracity, and so they hired people to check these things. Yeah. So somebody actually checked this.
They checked facts.
And they looked to see whether these were real quotes. His response, I thought, was interesting and also typical of our age. He said the inclusion of the incorrect quotes was an accident and that he had no intention of fabricating any viewpoints.
Well, where did they come from then?
Yeah,
they didn't just magically appear.
He had no intention of doing it. He just, I guess, accidentally
he
did it.
On Ambien.
Yes, something.
Typed it in his sleep.
I was not my best self. Yeah. Yeah, right. Okay, whatever, dude. Just don't do that.
I remember a long time ago when I was doing a lot of writing, I met some guy at a party and I was chatting with him and he'd just gotten a new computer and he was going, it's great. It's easy to write with a computer.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it's not easy to write. Writing is hard. Writing well is hard.
Okay, so as a person who had to finish...
It's easy to type on a computer.
Well, as a person who had to finish a dissertation, I will say this, because part of it was with a computer and part of it was without. And... It's easier to move text around.
Oh, no.
That was the only thing I found it was easy about it. But I'm just like, okay, I don't have to like tape a bunch of stuff together and cut stuff
out. No, I get that, and I love that.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
But this guy was saying that because you have a computer, you were right.
It writes itself.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. So, I mean, now it does, but...
yeah, that's the point, exactly.
Declining trust in doctors is widening the health gap between conservative and liberal Americans. A recent study.
There's an upside to that. No.
Nature Human Behavior suggests that
I didn't say that.
Quote, conservative Americans. I'd hate this term conservative.
Yeah, nothing, I don't know what that
nothing
means.
Conservative here.
It means nothing to me.
I'm sorry to run that into the ground, but anyway, conservative Americans have experienced worse health outcomes and higher mortality rates than their liberal counterparts over the past decade. The research provides evidence that this widening health gap stems from demographic shifts within the political coalitions and a growing distrust in medical professionals among right-leaning individuals. These changing attitudes towards seeking and following medical advice tend to leave conservative individuals more vulnerable to preventable health risks.
I have a different explanation, which is, as healthcare costs spiral out of control and the availability of health insurance is becoming less and less, it's sour grapes. It's kind of like, well, I don't need that anyway, because you have to justify it to yourself. Otherwise, you're lacking something central that you need.
Mm.
And I think there's a lot of people telling themselves that they don't. That's a bunch of hooey, because that's how you rationalize to yourself the fact that you don't have access to something that you both need and deserve.
Yeah. Well, you've probably heard people say, I don't go to the doctor because you get sick when you go there.
But there's also...
There's some element of truth to that.
But they're also trying to find something, you know, and you don't know whether whatever thing that they find in you
is
pre-approved or not.
It's a mixture of a lot of things. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like, I know better than them. I've read this. You know, they follow an influencer or something who tells you to
Silver. My mother was doing that back before they even had internet. She always knew better than the doctors. She didn't need some fancy schmancy instantaneous mass communication system to make her think she knew everything. She just thought she did. Them doctors don't know nothing.
Well, and if you go to the doctor, all they're going to do is tell you to lose weight and quit smoking.
Yeah, well, exactly. My mother didn't want to hear that.
Yeah. No, it's a lot of things. I mean, you know, and people like in the Confederacy tend to be poorer, so they probably have less access to health care, it's a matter of paying for health care or groceries. Yeah.
Well, that's what I said. I think there's sort of a reactive formation where they're, because they can't have it, you actually kind of say, well, it must not be worth anything. I mean, you need to do this kind of mental economy in your head, right?
No.
Like, okay, why isn't it that I don't have these things? Well, they must not be worth it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not valuable.
Lindsey Graham had a suggestion this week.
I got one for him, too.
He thought the Nobel Peace Prize should be renamed the Trump Prize.
You know, I watched that cabinet meeting where they were all basically filleting him, and I just kind of like... You know, you got to get for the real deal here. You know, it's like this cabinet guys, they're way off. I mean, this guy, he's getting it done. This should be the Trump Prize. Yeah, right. And also, that picture where he's healing people, that's the real thing. That's a photo.
That's a photo they took.
That's a photo, yeah.
Yeah, that's a, that's healthcare for the the conservatives who can't afford it. So they don't trust doctors, but they trust like Trump or Joe Rogan or somebody.
Well, that's the problem with extreme. I mean, this is a difficult question about knowledge, because if you're too open, right, then you get a lot of crap. But you have the same problem if you're too closed off. Like, if you don't trust anybody, then how do you find stuff out?
Yeah.
Then you have no stated or obvious standard. So that makes it easier to fool people, I think. The more skeptical you are, in a sense, there has to be a kind of a mid-range there. The more skeptical you are, I think, the more open you are to that kind of stuff, because you don't know enough about how the world operates to begin with to be able to assess the probability of the stuff you hear,
mm-hmm.
because you don't have enough information.
Yeah.
So then you start going on things like what they look like and how, you know, fun they are and things like that. So. I mean, that happened in early science. In early modern science, they didn't have any standards for how to do experiments and stuff.
Yeah.
And so guess what they believed? They basically said people who are rich are probably more trustworthy. So if you were a rich person who was pretending to be a scientist, people are going to believe you because they thought, well, he's not trying to trick me because he doesn't need money, not realizing how rich people are. But I mean, that was an early standard.
People said that about Trump when he ran in 2016. It's like, he won't be corrupted because he doesn't need the money.
He doesn't need the money. He said that himself, actually.
About himself. Well, then we know it's true.
Because he only says the truth. He mentioned that last week, which I thought was lie number 5,000. 5,000. I'm underestimating.
Just this week. But my favorite cabinet moment it was a couple months ago now, was when Trump bought all the male members' shoes. Specific type of shoe that he likes, loafers or Oxfords or something.
Yes.
But he guessed at their shoe size.
he guesses at everything.
Because he knows. He could look at somebody and
So
he bought
roots. Guesses their weight too.
Well, that's
Carnival Barker. That's what he is, basically.
So he bought Rubio these shoes.
Come see the mermaid.
He bought Rubio these shoes that were like literally three sizes too big. And they had pictures of him, Rubio, wearing them.
But it's little Marco.
At the cabinet meeting. He's wearing these. And they literally look like clown shoes. But he just did that to humiliate them. To say,
you think?
You know, either because he thinks he knows everything.
Well, there's
like he
that.
Said.
Yeah.
But I think also it's like, I'll give these idiots these things and I'll demean them and see, you know, you have to demean yourself.
So it's like a fraternity hazing kind of thing.
Kind of, yeah. Like, well, you know, the king is infallible and here's the perfect.
How you liking the shoes,
here's
Marco?
The perfect shoes.
Oh, I love them, Mr. President.
That's right.
It's a perfect fit. So.
So rather than the emperor's new clothes, it's the emperor's new shoes.
Exactly. So
I
mentioned this earlier. Milli Vanilli is not going to be playing at the Trump concert, the America's 250th birthday, which is really the Trump show.
I'm looking at a picture. Is that from like 1990 or something?
Yeah, Well, it's Milli Vanilli. They're from like 1990. But of course, I think they're the perfect act that should play there because they were total frauds. But they're not even going to not sing there. So.
Not even going to not sing. here's a wonderful story from Flint, Michigan. I'm going to be shocked by this. They did a big study where they decided, let's do this and see if it works. They gave money to pregnant women and noticed as a result that their childbirths were better and the health of their infants was also better.
Well, we better not do that again.
Yeah, so this was a new study that was published on Wednesday of this week, and it was published in The Lancet Public Health. And they found out that the more pregnant women received prenatal care, the healthier they were and the healthier their babies were. And actually, as a result, this is an interesting side effect, fewer women who were smokers smoked because they weren't as stressed out. So they gave the women a lump sum. This was, again, in Flint, Michigan, which is a very poor area. If you've ever been to Flint, you know that. Part of the Rust Belt. They gave women a lump sum of $1,500 midway through their pregnancy and then $500 a month through the first year of the child's life with no restrictions, no nanny state, no restrictions on how they could use the money. And it was established when they first started the program, which was in 2024, that the rates of premature birth had declined. Fewer babies were born underweight or in need of neonatal intensive care. So the women had this money. They were taking care of themselves and, of course, you know, indirectly then, of course, taking care of the baby. Moms told us, this is according to Dr. Mona Hanna, she's the director of this program. She said, moms told us, because of these dollars, I can take a day off work and pay for gas to go to my prenatal appointments. Oh. What an idea.
Wow.
We've talked about stuff like this in the past, but there's a little kind of an experiment down in Antarctica. It was a 10-month Antarctic isolation, and it shows how difficult a mission to deep space would really be. So, but it was a small group of people. It was a new paper published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. It presents results from a long-term isolation study in Antarctica. It used a combination of surveys, interviews, and wearable electronics and found that a crewed trip to another planet would face serious, highly predictable challenges. The study took place during a 10-month overwintering in Antarctica. Each subject had a job to do, but in most cases they were able to operate independently. The study found that subjects who had more frequent contact with their team members were more likely to report conflict, growing mistrust, and reduced performance.
So it's like Thanksgiving on steroids.
And you're stuck.
I mean, you're stuck. You can't get away.
And think about that on a spaceship. I mean, that would be even more confining, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And, I know, there's just so many obstacles. And I don't want to get into this again because we've talked about it a few times, but just so many obstacles.
Sure.
To do this. And then you hear people like Musk saying, we're going to have cities on Mars in 2 years. And it's like, yeah, go have some more ketamine.
Oh, dear. I have a story here that they... Let's see if I can find it. Golly, sorry about that. I'm a little disorganized. They have a new... They just made a new space rover or something?
Yeah.
They're testing out a new space rover.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And apparently they've got one ready to go. And I was kind of, all I could think of was that Gil Scott Heron song, Whitey on the Moon.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I mean, if you want to make robots that are smart, send those guys. You know, that's what they'd be good for.
Right. Oh, this was for a person to drive?
Or? Yeah, a person to drive around on the moon. Yeah. You know, play golf and like stuff like they did back in 1972.
That was the best when they were playing golf. Whitey was playing golf on the moon. Yeah. Not just Whitey's on the moon. Whitey's playing like the whitest sport on the moon.
It was like, Lord of mercy. Can we just dial it back a little bit?
A couple weeks ago, I talked to you about mosquitoes, and I know you're a mosquito magnet, and you're not going to like this news.
Uh-oh.
Mosquitoes can become attracted to insect repellent. The insect may learn to associate the chemical DEET with a, quote, blood meal, according to the researchers. So they go,
do they have to call it that?
Yummy! Just then, the study says, as Pavlov's dogs learn to associate the ringing of a bell with food, so mosquitoes can learn the presence of DEET indicates the possibility of a blood meal.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense because, obviously, you can't apply it with 100% on your skin, right? So there's going to be little patches.
Oh, sure.
And they know that somebody's, you know, doing that, and they just find the little place where you didn't put any of it on. So, yeah, it makes total sense. So anyway, I lost that story. This was, but this was NASA. They awarded two companies contracts to develop 21st century versions of the famous Whitey on the Moon buggy astronauts.
It doesn't say Whitey on the Moon.
Yeah, that's what they're gonna call it. Because if Elon's there, it's gonna be whiter than white. So we gotta have that.
It could be a Cybertruck on the Moon.
That I'd love to see all the Cybertrucks on the Moon. Actually. I think that'd be the best place for them.
I love it how
every time I see one of those things.
Every time there's like some incident with one. There's one where a couple weeks ago, there's a wade function where you can like wade through water. So he thought he could drive in the lake. And, you know, of course it didn't work.
Yeah.
So there's all these pictures of this Cybertruck.
Like cheering masses.
Sinking in the lake. And everybody loves that. But, new research shows that fashion's, quote, plus size models are still smaller than the average American woman.
Sure.
Shocking, absolutely no one.
Just want to mention that Barney Frank passed away.
Oh, yeah.
Barney Frank, I mean, he did a lot of things, but I think he's probably best known for something that probably helped this nation to an incredible extent, And that, of course, was the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, which he co-sponsored with Senator Christopher Dodd of Connecticut. And it was it put the tightest rules on the financial industry, basically, since the liberalization of finance in the 1970s and 80s. And kind of took us back to a more structured, you know, financial structure. But of course, they've oozed out of that in the meantime. But he was known, of course, for many things. He was very, very funny. And he was also the first member of Congress to, while as in Congress, to marry another man. So that was kind of a unique one for him.
I'd forgotten about the Consumer Protection Bill.
Huh? Yeah, that was his deal. He knew a lot about this stuff, and it was interesting. Nancy Pelosi said, you know, if anybody can get this done, it's him, because he's just super smart, could take complicated things that, you know, like financial derivatives and so on, and explain this very simply to other people and stuff like that. So yeah, he was really helped in a lot of ways. So Barney Frank.
It was that movie, the Big Short, where they had Margot Robbie in a bathtub explaining derivatives.
Yeah, Barney Frank tried to do that, but they didn't want to have him in there. So it was kind of like, I bring my rubber ducky. No, that's okay, Barn. Just sit this one out.
Pigeons may be navigating with their liver. It's much like a lot of people in Wisconsin.
My liver says go that direction. What do you know? There's a bar. Works every time.
Noah, animals use various techniques to navigate. They might be using the iron in their liver to.
That makes sense.
Like as a magnetic sense that that they're using the magnetic fields to navigate with their liver.
Horse testicles have more iron, as I recall from The Simpsons, by the way.
Very educational.
Very educational. Speaking of which, there was an inventory done of how many brats were sold at the Bratfest over the Memorial Day weekend here in Madison, Wisconsin.
How many?
And it turns out that the number was 98,527 brats sold. And that's pretty amazing. It's not clear how the number of brats sold compared to past years, because they don't really like keep a running total, but they counted this time. And so that's pretty good. That's almost 100,000 brats for those of you who are mathematically challenged. And they raised money for a charity during this 3-day event where they were selling the brats. So the organizer, Eric Salzwedel, said last year was the first year since the pandemic that the Bratfest was able to fill all of its volunteer spots. And as you recall, if you're a Madisonian, the fest was canceled back in 2020 and 2021. Uh-oh. Oops. So I read a little thing this week about Al Gore, and I found this fascinating because I teach a class in environmental ethics. Mm-hmm. And what I do with my students is I tell them, think of this as on two levels. Think of it in terms of like why you think we need to worry about climate change. What's our moral imperatives? Why is this of concern to us? And then think of your second best argument, the one that might convince other people. And Al Gore, basically now, 26 years later, he's been doing this for a while, he started to go to that point. He still thinks it's a moral issue, and it's an issue about how we care about the earth and so on. But he's realizing that the best way to convince people now is by using economic arguments.
Oh, definitely.
So it's like, if you really want people to do something, you got to give them your second best argument, because nobody's listening to that first one. Yeah. So that's what he's been starting to do now. His presentation, he's substantially revised it to emphasize more the affordability of clean energy, green energy.
Well, I mean, we're far enough into it now. We've seen some of these results, and we've seen the wildfires and sinkholes and things like that. So, I mean, it's much more tangible, that kind of stuff,
right?
To say, that's a lot of money, you know, when these mansions burn up.
And, try insuring a house in Florida right now. I mean, that's pretty much not possible. So, you know, there must be a reason. Well, thanks for all the cat names. We got really a lot of cat names.
You've got many more than you need.
I have a buku to cat names
here. Do you see any favorites that are popping up, or it's probably just overwhelming at this point?
Well, I do think that Meowsy Dung is pretty darn good.
that's a good one. I like that. Oh, got about a minute and a half left. Do a quick story here. This is a guy. Where does he live? He's in Nova Scotia. He seemed like he was drunk all the time, so people thought he was just a big boozer. Turns out he has a rare illness where his stomach is essentially an auto brewery. It's called it's an auto brewery syndrome.
Oh my god!
And his stomach makes alcohol.
Wow!
And it's pretty much, you know, almost ruined his life there. But it's rare. There are about 100 cases have been documented over however long they've been documenting things. So it's really difficult to identify. And so this poor guy, his gut just makes booze, and then.
Or is that just the best alibi ever? Susie, I just want to let you know. My gut makes beer.
If you see me drunk.
It's just the gut.
It's not me.
So. Not me.
So there. Yeah, go ahead. Feel free, minions, to use that excuse. So. All right, we got to get out of here. Time to declare. The weekend. Enjoy your weekend.
It's going to be glorious. The weather is really nice.
Oh,
it's
super.
A nice range, and it's going to be nice, and the sky's going to be clear, and the highs are only going to be in the upper 70s.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. So frolic.
That's your
we command thee.
All right. Pants, was great to see you. I'm glad you're back.
Bud.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening, everybody. The Kiosk is next. And after that, Who Cooks for You with the Real Jag Wire. Wower. Yower. How do you say that?
Jaguar.
Jaguar. So it is 2 o'clock. You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM Madison. Bye-bye, everybody. Have a great weekend. Get up off of that thing. Try to release that pressure. Get up off of that thing. And shake the you feel better. Get up off of that thing. And shake the sand now. Get up off of that thing. And shake the you feel better. Get up off of that thing. And try to release that pressure. This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, May 29th. This is Bird Note. She was an incredible astronomer, master of the stars, extremely knowledgeable of landscapes and geography, an expert forager and healer, an amazing naturalist. She was in tune with the birds and their calls, notably the hoot of a barred owl. Harriet Tubman was a heroic abolitionist in the cause to end chattel slavery and an expert birder. On the Underground Railroad, Tubman used the song of the barred owl as a signal to let freedom seekers know that she had arrived. Her call let them know when it was safe to come out. She mastered the sound and used it throughout the Underground Railroad. After learning